Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello and welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and I have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in our life and our mind, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Today, I will actually be bringing you my conversations with two teenagers and a college student about their experience in this pandemic era. I know that we've talked about children, we've talked about how it actually affected us as adults in different ages and groups and industries, and how it affected us as family members or in our businesses. But that was two groups which I really wanted us to hear from their experience, what they're going through. And maybe if you have a teenager at home or you have a young adult at home who are staying, kind of get the idea about what they're experiencing. And then I am so excited to bring sharing with you a dialogue that I had with Ellen Meredith, an energy intuitive and an energy medicine practitioner with over 35 years of experience. And she wrote this book, which is really awesome. She's the author of The Language Your Body Speaks. She will be giving us some great tips in how to get in tune with your body and connect and heal yourself. Don't forget, please go to subscribe to my YouTube channel, Dr. Fujian Zain, Instagram, Dr. Fujian Zain, Twitter, Dr. Zain, any of those social media. I love to hear from you. I love to share with you. I love to hear what questions or topics you would like to hear for me to bring a guest, or if you want me to share with you, we have a question and answer or a feedback, just connect with me. So don't go anywhere. We have an amazing show for you today. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to Inner Voice. And I'm excited to speak with Cameron Munsefi. And the reason I invited him to share his experience with us is because I know that it is difficult for parents who have their children at home. But you know who it is more difficult for? The teenagers who are at home. So I wanted all of you to hear it firsthand from teens out there and what's going on with them and what is it that they actually want from you, the parents. So welcome to the show, Cameron.
Hi, I'm very excited to be here. This seems nice. Very fun.
Yes, and nice to have you.
I'm glad to be here.
So listen, it's not going away. It just seems like you're going to be home for a while, huh? And not going back to school. And I'm even hearing the rumor of maybe not even in the fall. What do you think about this?
I mean, it's scary, first of all. Second of all, I think a lot of people, the reason we're scared is because we don't know what to expect. At least that's for me. And it creates a lot of anxiety for me. But I feel like if we just take it, you know, with just one day at a time and we follow social distancing and whatnot, I feel like there could be a possibility we could go back in fall. I hope so. I just have my hopes up for it. I don't want to get my hopes up too high, but I am hoping for it because I miss my friends. I miss that social environment of being in school and having that regular daily routine of driving to school, going to my classes, hanging out with my friends, coming home, doing my homework, and just being able to live like the normal life, if you can say. So, but I guess this is our new normal. I guess so.
Cameron, how has it been for you this past like 6-7 weeks?
It's been very like all over the place. It's been hard at times, but at times it's been enjoyable. I have had the privilege of going and socially distancing, seeing my friends. I sit in my car and they're across the street and I can see them. But there are times where you're with your family so much that you argue a lot, and it's hard. It is hard to argue with your parents and your siblings and whatnot a lot, but at the end of the day, we're family, which is the best part. We're getting through all of this together. So it's not as bad, because there are some people who have it really rough out there, losing jobs, losing their homes. So I'm lucky enough to be in a really nice house with a really big family. And that's, I'm just trying to get the positives out of it. There's a lot of negatives, but trying to pay attention to the positives.
Good. How has the education been different? Because I know you love your high school and you love being with your friends, and obviously the social aspect of it has changed. How is the academic sense? Do you feel like you're gaining something? Does it feel that, kind of like is better or worse? What do you think?
You know, I think a lot of people might think it's better because we get to just sit in our pajamas and go to class in our bed. But to me, I'm not getting as much out of it as I am when I'm in school, because I'm in the comfort of my own bedroom and just in that environment, it's harder for me to learn. You know, going to school, putting my uniform on, sitting in a desk, that gives me more discipline. So I pay attention more and I get a lot more. Plus classes are longer when I attend school in person. So we're not learning as much as we were a few months ago when we were present in class on campus.
It must also be harder to discipline and get up at the same time and, do the things that are routine, that it became routine when we went to school early in the morning and came back. How are you trying to discipline yourself to a structure while you're at home, or are you?
I mean, I am, actually. At first, I wasn't. At first, it was just wake up, do my school, do whatever I want throughout the day. And then I realized that's making me really bored and more stressed out about, you know, not being able to go out that much anymore. So I've found that waking up at a certain time in the morning, usually around 8, because my school starts at 8:15, I go to class. I'm usually in my bed, but I get up, I make my bed, and then I sit down in my bed and go to my class. And, you know, I've tried to set up a schedule as much as I can, but there are days where I really can't follow it, where, you know, my family wants to go swimming, but that's not in the agenda. That's okay. Something like that. So, but I have created a schedule for myself. Every day I create a separate schedule. So
I'm going to ask you a weird question, and not relying on you to give anybody of your friends out and their secrets, but just in general, knowing that this might happen. And one of the things that happens a lot with the youth, whether they're teenagers or the young adult, is that they get bored a lot. And boredom is part of the game of that age, right? And one of the things people do when they get bored is, have alcohol or use drugs or do all of that. What would you say? What are your thoughts about this idea that maybe we could, you know, find something else to do? And what are other things you found to do when you get bored?
Honestly, for me, the biggest thing I found to do right now while I'm bored is work out. I think it's a really good stress reliever. It gets a lot of my anger out. Even if it's for 20 minutes a day, you feel good after. I try to do it for like an hour a day. And I think that just allows me to steer away from the boredom. And if it's at nighttime and I'm really bored, I'll watch some TV. I'll go through YouTube. I'll do anything like on social media, you know, anything that steers a person away from all that stuff is good. So I think just distracting yourself with TV or working out, which is amazing, you know, so.
What would be your advice to the parents of teens through this time and however else longer it's going to take?
I think the biggest thing is that the kids do love their family. We all love our family, but we do, to a certain point, really need our alone time because we miss our friends. We want to FaceTime our friends. So I think the biggest thing for me, at least, and I know a lot of other kids my age feel like this, we just want a little privacy, some time in the day, some time alone, some independent time. And I think that's right now what a lot of us deserve going through this. So
how could they honor that? Like, would you have to say to them something that, you know, let them know? How would they know when you needed your privacy and when is it that maybe you're hiding in your room and they want to also hold the social aspect of the family dinners and, you know, some activity with you?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that we should tell them. I at least tell my family, I'm like, listen, I just want a little bit of alone time right now. I'm going to go FaceTime a couple of my friends. I hope that's okay. I'll be out for dinner and hanging out a little bit later. So I think between the parents and the children, creating a sort of structure of, okay, let's have lunch together if we can, maybe dinner, maybe a game night or something along those lines is important. And then if we want our alone independent time, I think the best thing to do is just tell our parents.
How do you connect to your friends at this time? Because I know this age, the most important concept of this age is to be with your peers and to enjoy the companion and all of that. And I know a lot of people, including myself, we do Zoom parties with our friends, gather around. How is that for you and your friends at this point, having to kind of get together via the different types of social media?
It's funny because for me, I feel as if I'm closer with my friends right now more than ever because one, we're all going through the same things, but two, we appreciate each other more. Whereas before this, you know, we used to always see each other at school or over the weekends and we just knew we were going to hang out. Now, I feel like because we can't really see each other that much, we appreciate the time we talk on the phone together even more. At least that's how I feel. And I know a couple of my friends feel the same way. So
thank you. One more question. And that's when you are with other siblings, right? Like you have two younger siblings. And the needs for different ages of the children and teens are very, very different. So How do you kind of navigate this concept of being always at the house with, other siblings who completely have different needs?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me, at least, is my alone time. You know, I've taught my siblings how to, you know, just if I want my privacy, I want my privacy because I'm going to give them the same respect when I tell them, do you want your privacy? And they're like, yes, I'll give them their privacy, but I'd like the same thing back. So I think boundaries are the biggest things between siblings, no matter what the ages are. Even if it's two 16-year-old twins, I think boundaries are the most important thing.
Wonderful. Last thing that you want people to know?
It will be over soon. Everything will subside. As long as we just stay safe, stay inside, we'll all get through it. Just do our part.
Thank you so much. And here is from the wisdom of a teenager. And we'll be right back. Thank you. everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. And I'm excited to have Hayden Hunziker with me today. The reason I've asked him to join us is because I was not going to even guess what our teens experience being at home, out of school, and I have no idea how you as parents are experiencing this. So I thought the best way is to have Hayden experience, tell us his experience and probably his peers. So welcome to the show, Hayden.
Thank you for having me here.
So what's going on? You've not been used to being homeschooled. You were at school and your peers were there, and you guys probably not only went to class, but had a lot of, you know, social time together, which all of that has been taken away, and now you're going through school at home. How is that for you?
It's been good and bad. Some of the good things is that since I'm, in quarantine, I have to stay home and I don't go to school. Good thing about that is that I get to sleep in, which means I get the amount of sleep I need to, you know, to grow. I also don't have to go through the stress that I have to go when you go to school. You just don't. That's why people don't like to go to school. They just don't like waking up early, going to school, having to put up with the bad teachers and stuff like that. But I mean, you also don't get the same quality of education as you do when you go to school. That's why they're posting like assignments online. I know my math teacher, she does Zoom meetings to help us do our work, and we do it through our math workbook, and then she assigns homework, and then she posts the answer keys on Google Classroom for our homework. And then my language arts, just the same thing. He posts assignments on Google Classroom, one assignment per week. My science, the way she teaches is really unorthodox, and she assigns stuff on Google Classroom, and she assigns it on this website. She created a website where we log in and we read a bunch of material, and then we answer some questions. So basically like reading comprehension. And then she gives us, like I said, an assignment on Google Classroom. And then once we're done with the week's assignments, she gives us like a little quiz. But the good thing is that nothing is graded, which makes sense, because like you're not getting taught, and how is anyone supposed to know if you got the material or not when you're not getting really, it's more like homeschooling. So you don't really get the same quality of education. So they're not grading. But what they are doing is that they are giving credit for the assignment. So if you turn in the assignment, they give you full credit. But if you don't turn in the assignment, they don't give you any credit. So it's basically, if you do the work, you get credit. If you don't, you don't get credit.
Can you concentrate, or would you have difficulty concentrating because now you're in a home environment, you know? Hayden, usually we come home and we want to play. And there are times that we do homework, obviously, at home. But it's different, right? Like, you know, you have to have a different type of a focus when you are at home, when your TV's there and all the other socialization concepts and friends and family and, you know, all of that, they're around. How do you support yourself? What do you do in order to concentrate better?
Well, I just go to my room and I try to turn off all the distractions, close my door, make sure I'm in a quiet environment, and I just do the homework. I don't really have any distractions usually. There's not really that much noise. And so it's not really a big adjustment on concentration. It's really the same. Yeah.
Do you find any type of socialization with your friends? Do you miss that? How has that been different for you?
Yeah, my friends, I don't see any of them. But the thing is, it's kind of harder for me because I have another group of friends. I have two friends that are actually my neighbors. But the thing is, they're hanging out with each other. they're quarantined. They're like in a group quarantine, right? Like they're isolating themselves as a group from everyone else, but it's kind of hard because they live right next to me and I don't get to, you know, hang out with them at all. But after the quarantine is done, hopefully I get to hang out with them.
How do you occupy yourself? What are some of the things that have become maybe new in your life because of the quarantine?
Well, something that changed is that I don't do sports. Like, since it's quarantine, all like the non-essential things have closed down. So I can't go to the gym, which I was really into, but I can't go there anymore, which kind of pissed me off. But what has not changed is that I still play, you know, video games maybe a little more than I used to because it's like there's nothing else to do. But I've also tried to, like, I don't know, find some other creative activities with maybe like 3D design and stuff like that. And I've also been continuing to do my like boxing training at home because I have like equipment for that. So that's not really changed, but I guess I focused on that more since there's nothing else to do.
What would be your suggestion to other teens who are at home? What is it that you found at this time that was helpful for you or positive for you that you could also share with them?
Well, I know some people my age, they don't really do the work that the teachers give us over online. So I just basically, they should basically do that since they should get the best amount of education as they can so they don't fall behind. So they're as best prepared as they can for when they go to high school.
And what would you have as a suggestion to the parents who have their teen at home all day?
Sorry, what was that?
What would your suggestions be to the parents who have teens at home?
Maybe make sure they do the work and I don't know, like try to keep them inside because the more social distancing we have, the sooner that everyone could go back to school and maybe hang out with their friends and stuff.
I also have noticed when talking to some of the teens that I work with is that the usage of Juuls and vapes and different things are getting more. I also have people who have gotten so bored that they get into the liquor cabinet of their parents and they're trying to get out of their boredom somehow. What would your suggestion be either to the teens or the parents in maybe just being watchful for all of that?
Well, the kids that find drinking satisfied them to have something to do, I don't really know because usually the drinking and the vaping is just to show off and maybe get attention because that's usually how it starts because all the time in movies they glorify it and everyone like always has an idol in a movie and maybe like that person drinks or smokes or something so they want to do in real life because they always want to be like that person. So it's really getting attention. That's why they do it. But for the kids that just do it because they're bored, I don't know. Like, I don't really know why it's cool to drink bitter liquid. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe tell the parents that they should throw out the liquid, and maybe alcohol helps them relieve stress, but that's really just a mask and like it's really fake. And it just only lasts for a couple of minutes or something, or maybe an hour. But really, once you're done drinking alcohol, you're left with nothing.
How do you handle stress? What could you give as a suggestion? What is it that you do that releases your stress?
I'm not really stressed out because there's no school, and that's really what stresses me out. So I guess I just, if I am stressed out, if I'm stressed out that I can't play with my friends, then I just play Minecraft with them or like other video games. And I basically Skype them while we play the video game, and then or FaceTime them, and basically we play the video game online together because some video games have that option.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Is there anything that I have missed that you really, really want to share?
I don't really know, but I guess the only thing I do is maybe play with my dog.
Okay.
Because she's really funny. And that's basically it. I kind of find this whole situation kind of beneficial for me because the only thing that I don't like is just not going to the gym, because everything else is like the same, because we don't have to go to school, so we don't have to waste the time in between classes, and they're already giving out classes online. That's pretty much it.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. And for all of you who are listening and watching, I hope that that was helpful if you have a teen at home, and for create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. Bye-bye.
Relationship at home? Are you wondering what all of the fuss is? And are you determined to guard yourself against all others? Or worried about how am I going to pay my rent or mortgage? In respect to the coronavirus stress, I'm offering a sliding scale online psychotherapy for anyone in California and life coaching to anyone in the world who's suffering financially. Please connect with me at foujan.com, foujan.com.
To the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Foujan Zain, and I have Kiana Hunziker with me. The reason I've asked her to join us today, it's because we always kind of think about and talk about a generation that's going to school, and a lot has been changing for them. So I thought, hey, let's have Kiana tell us what her experience is personally, and what does she see in her world as it has also crashed, where she was going to the university and then said, well, no, you're going to stay home. All of your courses are going to go online, since she didn't go to an online school. This is all new. And what's going on with a group that their world is socialization, is being together, it's their peers, and suddenly all of that has been taken away. So thank you, Kiana, for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So tell us, first of all, how was it for you to go from, going to classes, enjoying the teachers, the class, the group together, and suddenly you got to be in your home and doing everything online?
Yeah, it was a very difficult transition, I would say, because it was so sudden. So I'm a student. I'm a sophomore at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. And our university was one of the latest to react to the whole coronavirus situation. A lot of other universities were more proactive by saying immediately after it looked like the outbreak was going to have an effect on everyone. They basically immediately said, okay, the rest of the quarter is either canceled or online, but our university was probably one of the last ones to transition, and they kept giving us sort of false hope that because our like school was in a very isolated town, that we would still be able to have in-person classes for the remainder of the quarter. But then as soon as coronavirus cases started popping up in San Luis Obispo, they said, okay, no, we have to transition to virtual. And I mean, it's very hard for my university because we're a very hands-on university because we're a polytechnic school. So me and my friends of all different majors, biology, I'm a journalism major, I have like engineering major friends, we all have a lot of hands-on classes that a lot of people were worried couldn't be replicated online. Like it just like wasn't possible. Like I was supposed to be enrolled in a broadcast news class where the class was literally to go into the broadcast studio and practice producing a news show. And I just can't, like, you don't get the same quality of education and hands-on experience online. So I decided to drop that class for this quarter. And hopefully things resume to how they were in the fall, because it's just very difficult. As far as like motivation, I have heard from my friends, and for me myself, it's very hard to stay motivated when classes are online, just because a lot of teachers have cut class time in half or more. Like a class that I had, for example, that was supposed to be 4 days a week, the professor is now only doing it 1 day a week via Zoom, and then the rest is sort of self-study. And that's very difficult because, you know, you can't get help from your peers as easily, or tutoring, or, you know, even office hours for teachers, it's harder to get access and learn that way. So it's very difficult transition. And I think all we can do is hope that it ends soon.
How has this changed the socialization gamut? I know that with many of my clients that I work with, they're feeling lonely, but because some of them live together, that at least they've become much closer to their roommates, but also they've lifted a little bit of the social distancing and kind of quarantining by whether they're in a relationship and they live other places, they will still go back and forth. So it's not necessarily an isolation. I'm seeing more that it's almost like a group that connects together and they keep going back and forth between each other's home. But they're like segregated groups versus isolated one. What is your experience with your peers?
Yeah, me personally, I just went home to my family, but I know a lot of students and a lot of my friends who decided to quarantine with their friend groups so that they weren't completely alone, because it was sort of different. Some students had to go home to their families and then their roommates were left alone. So the roommates were just like, okay, I'm just going to go quarantine at my friend's house so I don't have to spend these months alone if I'm staying in the location that I'm going to university at. So yeah, they've sort of been quarantining, I guess, in clusters. For college students, obviously, we don't live in households, we live with friends. But yeah, I've also seen that too.
I've also experienced hearing from people with the financial issues, because some people were just being supported by their family, but a lot of college students are working and they were paying part of their rent and they were living together. And I'm sensing it's been so difficult because maybe one or two people in the group that were living together are not working anymore. You know, they were maybe working in restaurants or different types of places in order to have some cash flow, and all of those has been taken away. What are your thoughts about that, and how are the young adults really handling this?
Yeah, I'm fortunate enough to know, like, most of my friends are doing okay financially. A couple of them have lost, like, their part-time jobs, but a lot of them have been able to transition virtually. And then some of them are essential workers that do, like, essential work at the university, so they still are employed. So it has been very, like, uncertain. And also people have been complaining because a lot of students feel like they should get partial refunds for tuition. because the experience isn't the same. And then we're still, a lot of our tuition also goes to maintaining like facilities like the recreation center and stuff like that, that we aren't even able to use. So a lot of students are upset that they haven't even been issued partial refunds for their tuition or discounts. And it's only been like a month or so. So it's sort of hard to tell what the impact will be long term, but so far it's very uncertain.
Wonderful. Let me know also that, utilizing alcohol and drugs, marijuana or other drugs, are very common among college students. And some people right after high school, some of them start from high school, but some of them, it's like this openness that they don't live with family and they can really explore and experiment with different things. One of the things that I've noticed with some of the people I spoke with is that their usage of alcohol and drugs have gone a little bit higher because now they're sustaining their home and they are with friends, and it's gone a little bit higher where they don't have to necessarily function as much as they had to with studying or other aspect. And what do you think that what are what you're seeing, and what are your thoughts about this kind of like rise in usage?
I think for a lot of students now that they're sort of, if they're not quarantining with their families, maybe if they're staying at home, their usage of like substances probably has increased just because of boredom. Like if you're sitting in the house all day, there's nothing to do but I guess take recreational drugs or I guess drink. But yeah, that's an interesting point, but I assume it's probably gone up since this has happened, just a lot due to boredom and a lack of anything to do.
Yes. What is it that you would want your peers to know? What is it that has worked for you personally in this time that you've been able to motivate yourself a little bit, or kind of like, create a resilience through what's going on and the uncertainty of when it will all go back to the way it was? And do you think that life will be similar as you go back to the campus? What would you like your peers to know?
I think just like not losing hope that everything can go back to normal slowly later this year. I think staying motivated. One thing that keeps me motivated is just the fact that when things return to normal, I do like want to be in a good place academically. So I don't want to have this sort of pause in like my daily routine to like hinder my academic progress. So like when everything goes back to normal, I want to like hit the ground running and be able to still continue like doing what I have planned for the rest of my college career. So just trying to get involved in virtual ways, like in your university, to sort of stay engaged with like your friends and like people you associate with. Like I write for my school paper, so I still produce stories for them, and we still have meetings over Zoom to have like maintain some sort of contact with each other and to sort of like form groups. But it's tough because there are like, and I'm sure a lot of other, like a lot of peers of mine have like said hi to someone on campus and they didn't realize that was the last time they're going to see them again because they're graduating. So, I think it is very strange, but I think just not losing hope and maintaining as close contact with, peers as they can is really important, and friends and.
Beautiful. Tell me, what is it that you would want the parents of young adults to know? Any advice for them and how to handle this time with their young adult either living with them at home or maybe still staying at the campus?
I think just maybe being supportive by, asking them how they're doing, giving them peace and quiet when they need to study, because it's a strange transition to go back to maybe living at home. And yeah, I guess just talking and having more daily interactions and cherishing interactions with family.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. By the way, you're more than welcome at this time where you don't have the other pieces of the news to produce. You're more than welcome to produce any shows for me that you like.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your experience with us. And for all of you who are watching us, I hope that was helpful for you if you have a young adult at home, and create a great life for yourself and everyone around you. Bye-bye. Welcome back, everyone, to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I am so excited to have Ellen Meredith with us. She's the author of The Language Your Body Speaks, an intuitive and energy medicine practitioner with over 35 years of experience. She has served on the Faculty of Energy Medicine Pioneer for Donna Eden since 2010, and she teaches energy healing techniques all over the world. And we're going to talk about her book, The Language Your Body Speaks. Hello and welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me today.
It is a joy to have you because I really am interested. I've done a lot of personal energy work. I'm a master of Reiki also. Lovely. I don't do that professionally, but I have a lot of personal experiences on that personal experiences in going to different practitioners and receiving it a lot. And the only type of energy work that I've done has been Reiki. So I was very fascinated by your book, and I'm so glad that we could share about all of this. So first, for people who might not necessarily know about what energy medicine is, could you say a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so our body our bodies have two different communication systems built in. There's the chemical communications, which is what Western medicine uses a lot. And then there's energetic communications. And the energetic communications underlie the chemistry. So if you can influence your energies, you can absolutely influence your chemistry. But if you take a pill or something to influence your chemistry, it doesn't necessarily touch the energy communications of the body.
So when you talk about energy, can you also define what you mean by energy?
Yes. In science, when they talk about energy, it's this neutral thing. It's like protons and neutrons and all that stuff. But in healing work, the subtle energies actually are, that's what animates us is energy. It's the thing that makes us different from a chair or a stone, right? It's the life force, and it's consciousness. It's intelligent. It's not this neutral strand of stuff that fuels us. We're actually fueled by different vibrations of energy or different, I guess vibrations is the best way to say it. And they each have meaning on this instrument that's designed to receive the energetic communications. So I don't know if that's too abstract. I can get a little more precise if you want. But
I love it if you get a little bit more precise.
Okay. In a lot of different healing traditions, people have mapped energy. So your listeners might have heard of meridians or chakras or aura. Those are all kind of traditional names for these streams of energy that run throughout the body and between the body, mind, and spirit. So just under the surface of our awareness, all the time, the body, mind, and spirit are communicating using energetic signaling. But those signals aren't just on, off, plus, minus signaling like we think of electricity. It's almost easier to think of them as like different flavors. So, you know, it's like if you're going to make a recipe, you put a lot of different flavors in to get meaning, to get that delicious dish. And this self that we have, this body, mind, and spirit, energy, both forms the body. Science tells us this as well, that we're made of energy. That's a little hard to picture. Like, how's this hand made of energy? It seems so solid, but it is. It's made of energy. And then we're fueled by energy, you know, and we all know when we've run out of fuel, how it feels. And then the body's energies are organized using energy. So energy kind of organizes itself into patterns, into flows, into shapes. And we can dip into all of that language and participate. That's the built-in communication system that we have in our body, mind, and spirit, but we're not taught how to use it in our culture very well.
So your book is called The Language That Your Body Speaks. So you just talked about how these type of different waves or forms of energy have different types of language. They speak to us and to others in these types of languages. How do you define this language? How can we learn those kind of language when we are checking with our own body? And are we, is it more like an automatic, or is it more, is it, can it also be intentionally shifted from one type of energy to another?
It can absolutely be shifted. It can absolutely be influenced. Like in any communication, there's a back and forth. And we, it is our first language. As babies, as infants, we come in picking up energetic truths. I mean, you can tell as an infant whether your mother is upset or happy. You can read her energy. You can tell if a situation is safe or not. You know, your instincts pick that up. We have the built-in ability to speak this language. But as we become more and more verbal in English or whichever our native tongue is, we start to filter out our awareness of what the energies are saying. We filter out our instincts. We filter out all the signals and communications. And of course, then when the body wants to get your attention, she has to shout a little louder. So when you have symptoms that get stronger and stronger, it's your body trying to communicate something that you or I have never learned how to interpret or recognize, because it's not something that our culture thinks about or believes in, that we don't even think, oh, I can, if I have a headache, I can communicate with my body and release it. If my blood pressure is too high, I can just communicate in the language of energy and bring it down. Right? So the language of energy is not words, it's not intention, it's how the body, how energy communicates. And it does use imagery, it uses sound and all different kinds of vibration, rhythm. It uses gesture, it's the hands speak energy very well. So it's a very multidimensional language that I do teach in the book. I try to provide a total immersion experience. So as you read, you're reminded of all the ways you already know the language of energy, and I give you ways to build on that with explorations and things you can play around with.
You talked about the energy really holding inside of you, and maybe when it gets blocked or something happens where it might show itself as tension or headache or pain somewhere, or a sort of feelings that are there. So in what way can we listen to it, listen to the language, and do a type of a self-healing? Is it more, it's first recognition of it, being aware, and then what is the system that you utilize in order to have that communication with the self, and then have the shift or the releasing or the healing of whatever it is that is getting blocked?
Okay. That's a good question. And in the book, I give a lot of different tools for doing that. And one of the first ones I give is an exercise called healing hands. And why don't you do this with me? Okay. So you don't even have to pay attention. Just rub your hands together to activate them, because the hands already speak energy pretty beautifully. So it's a good place to start. Now, you've got two beautiful healing hands. Ask hand one, where do you want to go on the body? And just let it go there. And you don't have to think it. Just let your hand go where it wants to go. And then you ask your other hand, where do you want to go? And maybe go where it wants to go. And then you just hold that for a while until it feels like one of the hands wants to move. So maybe this hand wants to move over here now. And I say to the other hand, do you want to stay there or do you want to move? And it moves here. And you follow that process. Yeah, that's a good place too. You follow that process, and you don't have to mastermind it with your brain. Your hands will take you where they need to go until you've finished a process. At some point, you'll feel like, okay, that was good. Either because the body will feel heard and the symptom will recede, or you'll have the insights you need to know what's going on, or you will have hooked up whatever's unhooked, you will have activated whatever systems need some support or stimulation, you will unblock things that are blocked. It's a very simple tool. I've got dozens in the book. It's, you know, it's not a one size fits all. It's communication.
That's wonderful. I really felt the warmth, and I felt it as I was asking to where it goes, because I know, for example, when I've done Reiki, it's more of I go through the certain like chakras and go through all of that. There are times that, you know, intuitive voice tells me this is where it's needed more. Right. But just to simply ask the hand where it needs to go and the body responds, and it'll, you know, they'll have this inner communication about where it needs to be received, and then it leads the other part of our body to go and give. That's beautiful. It's very simple, but it's very profound and beautiful.
Thank you. And it's a concept that I talk about in the book called energy dialogue. With conversation, we don't do a whole analysis of what's wrong and how do we fix it. You know, we don't go through all the systems. When I want to talk to you, I'll throw something out and say, how you doing, or what's going on? And then you'll respond and I'll respond to that. And it's a relationship that builds through dialogue. And when we have an infant who's pre-verbal, we do the same thing. We don't do a whole catalog of what's wrong with my baby and, you know, going to give it to her. It is a back and forth of care and love and exchange and nonverbal communication. So we have a lot of knowledge about how to do that from infants, dogs, cats, you know, whoever we love that's nonverbal. And we can build on that to build to train our brain to tune into the language that our body always already knows.
It's also a very present moment concept versus coming to my body from an already known space versus yes. being spontaneous at that moment, being in tune, being present right. to what the interaction is constantly happening. And uh-huh. that interaction would lead me to do this, you know, to the next level and to the next level of my body. Yeah. Now, there's one aspect of it, which is self-healing. There's one exercise that you shared, and there's so many more exercises in your book. And how about if you're having this dialogue with somebody else, like you wanted to have this inner connection with somebody else of exchanging energy?
Well, it's the same process. And either I have the person use their own hands when possible, because I don't want to, I am a practitioner. I have clients all the time and I do hands-on work and I'm trained to do that. I'm an Eden Energy Medicine Advanced Practitioner, et cetera. But I always believe that the best healing is one where you learn tools for self-help, because you can't afford to come to me every day of the week. You know, that's too expensive. So you need to really know, what can I do to enter into dialogue with my own body, with my own instrument? But if I'm working with someone else and their energies are clogged and blocked or missing something, I can help facilitate that dialogue between them and themselves. I have them help them tune in. I help them hear what their body's saying to them. I sometimes hear it and say, hey, this is what I'm hearing here. Just like any conversation. You know, you can't help someone communicate with their partner to resolve a problem, but you can coach them through some practice sessions so they've got some new tools or skills or ideas about how to have that conversation more fruitfully. Mm-hmm. And so that's the approach I take with hands-on healing as well. But there's things I can reach that you can't. If I'm working on your back, there's things I can do for you you can't do for yourself. And hopefully, you know, that everybody will exchange those gifts with each other.
So you talk about some of the techniques are hands-on, so we use hands. But you also talk about sound. Yes. And healing with sound. Can you share some techniques with that? Or
absolutely. So I'm going to invite everybody who's watching, including you, to find some part of your body that needs some attention. And it doesn't have to be pain. It could just be, hey, pay attention to me. Because we're not always looking at what's wrong. We're also looking at what's needed. Often an illness is due to something missing, not something clogged or blocked. So you're just going to go to a place that... it needs something. So for me, it's my ear right now. I don't know what it is. And because we're on the radio, I'm not going to sing. You could sing a tone that your ear needs to hear right now. But what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to just choose a rhythm that my ear seems to want right now, another form of sound. And I'm going to tap it on my heart. I'm going to hope not to hit the microphone. And I'm going to do. And what I find wants to happen is now my foot wants to take the rhythm.
Wow.
So now I'm tapping my foot with that rhythm that I just felt I wanted. And as I'm doing it, my ear is clearing. The energies of my ear are naturally just clearing and shifting. So that's one way to use sound, is take it to a place where your body's talking to you. And, you know, it is kind of like if we're trying to talk to a creature, or we're trying to talk to someone in a foreign language, and we're using kind of fake sign language and, you know, trying to communicate. You know, we don't want to shout. That doesn't get across. We have to find universal symbols or signals that both sides can understand. So the body understands sound. If I put on soothing music, your body's going to understand that. And if I put on wild rock, you're going to get activated and your body understands that.
That was interesting, because first when I noticed that in the book, the first thing that showed up for me was music from outside. And you just taught me that it doesn't need to be necessarily something from an outside concept. It can be a sound that we're creating, whether it's the tapping or the humming, and it doesn't even have to be just from this side. It could be my foot tapping. It could be any part of the body that makes that sound, because it, you know, it needs some sort of a vibration where it unblocks all that's going on in the body.
Right. Or provides a rhythm that organizes what's going in the body so it can happen more efficiently. It's not always blockage. That's kind of common in a lot of people's theories right now, is, you know, we have to just unblock and we'll be fine. I find that actually most illness is not about blockage. More of it is about not getting what you need, not getting your soul's truth expressed through the body. So it's more, I ask the question, what's needed here? Not what's wrong here, not what's blocked, but what's needed. Because often what happens is that when you really want something, you clear the space for it. If your body needs something, you're providing it, it'll let go of the blockage. The blockage is telling you to stop, pay attention, I need something here. And so often blockage is quite easy to clear just by providing the energetic truth that's needed in that moment.
This is beautiful. The book is amazing, everyone. Please, please, please get this book. It's right here, The Language Your Body Speaks. It teaches you how to speak the energetic language of the body, mind, and spirit through simple experiments, exercises, and practices. And it offers you a potent personalized path to healing. And this is what it teaches you: how to tune into your body's subtle energies using all of your senses, developing a rich vocabulary of energy communication for dialoguing with the body, accessing the guidance system built in your body, and response to the body's communication in the language of energy to deepen into true communion between your body, mind, and spirit. It activates your body's miraculous abilities to heal itself and creates meaningful energy conversations that allow you attune to and embody the spirit that's unique in energy. Everyone, Ellen Meredith, she's the author of Language Your Body Speaks. You can find her in listening-in.com. Listening-in.com. Ellen, in 1 minute, to complete our conversation, what is it we haven't talked about and you really want our listeners and viewers to know?
Okay. I think I want everyone to know that you don't have to have special psychic skills to speak the language of your body. It is the ability to speak. It is built into all of us through our senses and through how we just communicate inside. So everyone can develop the ability to speak this language.
Beautiful. I had my own experience with you and it was awesome. Thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And for all of you who are listening or viewing us, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye-bye.